my name is Christopher.
Hi, my name is Laura.
Hi, my name is Nicholas.
Our daddy is the gourmet.
Gourmet.
And you're listening to the gourmet.
No, you're listening to the Room Ward Podcast.
Room Ward Podcast.
Do it again.
And you're listening to the Room Ward Podcast. Oh! And you're listening to the Room Ward Podcast.
All right, this is feedback with the scandalous conclusion of my interrogation with the intrepid Room Ward columnist, the gourmet. What's the future of the gourmet column in the years to come? How do you see it? How do you see it playing out?
Oh God, I don't know.
Is it something you still want to do when you're 50?
When I first started doing it, you know, when I originally started doing this, I just wanted to get the one review published. I never, you know, banked on getting a column. I never expected it to last this long. I've always been saying there's going to be some time where I have to give this up. I can't do this forever. You know, my kids are getting older. They're more demanding of my time. You know, I have cut back on my contributions to the magazine. First, I wanted to get, I'm like, okay, if I can get 50, you know, being 50 issues, that'll be great. I hit 50 and then I'm like, okay, 100. If I can get to 100, I think maybe I'll retire at 100. Well, that was 12 issues ago. So now I'm thinking, okay, 13 years. 13's a, you know, the magic number,
right?
You know, in the horror genre. Maybe when I hit 13 years, I'll retire. So I don't know.
Well, I guess you can't really say that because right now you're still doing it because you're still interested in doing it.
Yeah.
Right? And in fact, I think probably in the last few years, you've gotten more dividends from doing it, just in terms of you've gotten to meet more of the people that you've written about, and you're more kind of, you circulate more outside of just writing about films, right? So it's evolving.
Yeah, but it's not making me rich.
No, but you have another life. You have a real life. This is a side gig. It's a hobby.
Yeah, it's a hobby that, you know, I have owe most of my DVD and Blu-ray collection to, for sure. That's part of the reason I've done it. It subsidized, you know, my collection. I can honestly say that when I do retire, I could probably start with film A, and it would be more than, and if I watch one movie every day, it would take me like 6 years before I'd have to watch the same movie again. And yeah.
Hang on. So that was the plan? To be able to watch a different movie every day for 6 years?
No. I'm just saying if I wanted to, the plan was to have the job, have the gourmet underwrite my movie collection. Because, you know, just like everybody else.
Some journalists dream of Pulitzer Prizes, writing books. You just want free DVDs.
Swag, man. It's all about
the
swag.
Would you ever write a book?
T-shirts? I've already written a book. It's in 112 parts so far. I have thought about compiling it and, you know, maybe expanding a few things. You know, I've got lots of material that I've put on the old Room Ward site. Now the mortuary, you know, I can certainly, some of that stuff's pretty good. Just needs a little spit polish, link it thematically. Jeez, like if I published a full transcript of the Robert Kerman review, there's like the interview, there's 400 pages right there. I mean, he told me I could write whatever I wanted, but, you know, I wasn't going to trample on the man's dignity. I will save it till his eulogy.
I'm not speaking as a scientist, but as the man in the street. This so-called documentary footage is offensive, it is dishonest, and above all, it is inhuman.
Yes, yes, of course. We all know what Alan was like. He overdid it as usual, but what you saw is a rough cut.
Perhaps I haven't made myself clear, but I refuse to have anything to do with this material.
Look, Professor, we are talking about the most sensational documentary to come along in years. And you want us just to shelve it, to forget about it, as if it had never been found? Is that what you want?
Yes. Yes. That is precisely what I want. I've seen the rest of the material. You haven't. You haven't seen the stuff that even your editors didn't have the stomach to put together. And if you had, you wouldn't hesitate but to agree with me.
Speaking of eulogies, you recently put on the mortuary an old interview that you did with Sage Stallone via email that I guess you could never use any of it in the magazine.
Well, no, because it doesn't really impart any information.
He was answering a question about various home video releases and how technology has changed over the years.
Yeah, it was for our Black 100 issue. I was doing a small piece on the changes in home video that have taken place since RoomWorx started. I mean,
right.
RoomWorx started, everything was on VHS. You know, it wasn't until I got married that I got a DVD player. I used some of our, you know, wedding hall to get our first DVD player. That thing was like $350.
Mm-hmm.
It would have been 2000. So that's when I got the DVDs. And ironically, the first horror DVD I bought, was the Grindhouse release of Cannibal Ferox. Eerily enough. So I'm doing this piece and I'm trying to get hold of, you know, people who run DVD labels, you know, to get their thoughts on, you know, how they originally saw DVD as a business opportunity and where they think, you know, home video is going to go in the future. One of those people I contacted was David Sulkin, who's like the media rep for Grindhouse Releasing. I've, you know, corresponded with him numerous times in the past. Put stuff on the message boards and the blogs for him. So I, you know, sent him, I quoted the email in there, just some questions. He's like, all right, you know, I'll send you some answers back, you know, in a bit. And then out of the blue, I got that email from Sage Stallone, running down all the home video formats he had as a son of a grizzled, you know, movie star. And obviously, I couldn't use anything. I sent him a follow-up email saying, you know, I want to write a little bit about Grindhouse Releasing and what you guys are doing, but
nothing came back.
Nothing came back.
But it does count as a previously unreleased interview, so I'm going to link to it when I post this show, even though it's incomprehensible.
Well, yeah, if you want to know that he watched, you know, 60mm flicks back in the 70s, I guess, projected on the wall, sure. But yeah, you know what? I was sorry to hear of his passing. You know, he seemed to be a character, and you know,
it's tragic. It was an accident, right?
Well, they haven't come up with the cause of death yet, but oh, there's all kinds of speculation. You know, that he was dealing OxyContin because they found pill bottles at his house. It's all speculation. Like I said, I feel bad for, you know, his dad and his family. Because, of course, when something like this happens, the media drags everybody through the mud, the TMZs of the world. And because everybody can comment on these stories, you get all the comments below, people who think they know better, cynical people, who, oh, he was doing this, he was doing, like, you don't know this person, you can't talk about this person like that. People read two paragraphs, you know, of a news brief and assume they know all the surrounding details. I don't know, of a story, and they just spout bullshit. The first thing that comes to their head. It's disheartening.
I blame it on horror movies. So outside of the column, outside of Rumorg specifically, you've been dabbling in other realms of the Gore Maze expanding universe, including some filmmaking projects. Tell me about some of those.
I have.
You and Last Chance Lance have become budding filmmakers.
Yeah, I guess last August, you know, I had Michael Todd Schneider, head of Maggot Films, up here, and we had, like, the world premiere of Revenge is Their Middle Name. And, you know, 70s rape revenge exploitation throwback, you know, directed by Anthony Matthews, which still isn't available anywhere. So if you didn't come to the screening, it was your only time to see it. It's pretty well done, you know. Movie, I think they spent $4,000 making it or something. So while he was here, he asked me if I would appear in one of his Maggot Corner episodes, which he originally used to do for Meat Socket magazine, you know, when he used to come on a CDR. Some of them are on his website. So, you know, we concocted a story and shot it in like one day just down the street from here, right at the corner of Dundas and Keel. And then the hole in the wall bar and Crossroads, which is almost behind this building. And he edited it and put music on it, gave it a VHS look because we were using a, you know, high-resolution camera. And then he came back last February to show And Then I Helped, which is the, you know, the first of four features he's finished up and he's trying to get out. So we had a screening at the Toronto Underground Cinema, which I arranged and unfortunately picked a Sunday because I thought this is, you know, a 70s styled movie. What better day than on Psychedelic Sunday, you know, when they play all the classic rock tunes on Q107 here. Unfortunately, it was Super Bowl Sunday. Not being a sports fan, I didn't realize that. So we got like two people who weren't, you know, involved in the screening to come out to the theater. It's pretty embarrassing.
Pretty dire. Eye-opening to know that horror fans are also Super Bowl fans.
Apparently. But we did use the opportunity to film. It's because, you know, I introduced it, and then afterwards I did a Q&A with Michael Todd Schneider, and we took the opportunity to film it, and we're going to use that in his faux documentary, Let's Make a Horror Movie, which is about the making of And Then I Helped. Mm-hmm. So it's going to have some surreal sequences. I'm overeager interviewer praising him for his masterpiece. So it was fun doing. We did one scene on the last day of the Festival of Fear with Tim Sullivan, which was fun. And then the next day we did this short. And then they came back in February. We shot some stuff.
So you're actually starring in this movie?
No.
You have a sizable role.
No.
No?
No, I just appear in a couple of sequences.
Okay. You're being humble.
I haven't seen it yet, but it wasn't that much. But it was good because I improvised everything. But while he was here, they always had the camera out, and they're always shooting things. So even though he was only here, well, this was basically just 2 days.
Right.
Because there was the night we showed the movie, and then the next day, you know, we got together and sort of worked on getting rid of our hangovers from the night before. And they had the cameras going, a bunch of stuff, and he used it in, like, I think two more episodes of this Maggot's Corner, which is sort of this, sometimes they're connected, they're not, it's kind of surreal, very Lynchian vibe to it, because he's a big David Lynch fan. But it's, you know, it's stuff that really happened, but he's used it as, you know, part of a fictional narrative. So I found that very inspiring. So when I found myself one early morning with a friend who was having a little difficulty getting home, I pulled out my camera and started shooting things that I thought looked cool with no real intent in mind.
Right.
But when I got home, you know, like the next day, and looked at the footage, I'm like, there's a little story in here. So I found the perfect piece of music, figured out how to, you know, sync the music, overlay the music over the ambient noise because, you know, I didn't want that in there. And I made my little official 2-minute short, Zombie Dawn.
Which we premiered on the mortuary.
Exactly. And it's available on my YouTube channel.
So you've got the filmmaking bug now.
So I got the filmmaking bug.
So you're going to do more fictional narrative films?
I'm working on a, you know, sort of a black comedy short with Jesus Maggot for Maggot Films is going to sort of tie into the Maggot Corner collection thing that we did.
Can you see any of this Maggot Corner stuff?
It's on DVD. You can't see it online.
Okay. Where do you see it on DVD?
Well, you can purchase it from maggotfilms.com.
It's called Maggot Corner.
Maggot Corner, yeah. Maggot
it's just
Corner.
Like little like vignettes, interviews, and...
No, they're little short films. It's a series of short films.
Right.
Well, I'll show you.
And this faux documentary.
The Making of And Then I Helped. Let's Make a Horror Movie. Yeah, it's
When's that going to come out?
That'll be out later this year. And Then I Helped is getting a limited release from Michael. They're trying to get a distributor for it.
Okay.
I think it comes out next week. I was interviewed for a DVD supplement for it as well. And then there's the Beelzebub documentary.
Right.
Which I contributed footage to.
Which
and
we saw
was interviewed
a clip
for.
Of that.
Yes. I don't know how good that's going to be.
Well, with the Beelzebub name, it can't be anything less than top notch.
No, I'm just referring to myself.
I think the first thing you need to understand about Beelzebub that he is metal. And as somebody who is metal, too, there is a kinship that is there. I understand where he's coming from. When you're a metal, you do not care what anybody else thinks. You do the best that you can with what you have. And you stand behind that. And that, I think, is what appeals me the most. Appeals to me the most about Bill's movies. They're very genuine. They're intelligent. On the surface, yes, they're full of nudity and profane situations, but there is an underlying intelligence in there that I think people really need to look for.
So you're a big fan of Beelzebub, and you're friends with him.
Yeah.
Not as close to him as, say, Last Chance Lance is, but you're pretty tight.
I guess I've hung out with him a few times. I went to a strip joint with him.
So you like his movies?
Yeah, I appreciate his sense of humor. Bill's a character. he has very, very distinct views. And he's quite philosophical.
The thing that I like, I'll tell you what I like, and I think what I don't like about him as a filmmaker. What I really like about him as a filmmaker is he's refreshingly honest and upfront about his lurid intentions. We've seen a lot of films in recent years where the filmmakers disguise their purient impulses based on moral superiority. Like, there was a whole cover story in Rue Morgue on the movie The Girl Next Door from a few years back. And the filmmakers were making the case that, you know, we made this movie because it was important for us to show that these things happen in the world. It's like, man, you made this movie so we could all get off on watching a young girl getting raped and tortured and whatever else. That's it. And you can't own up to your intentions, so you can't say that because you'd come off like a sleazeball. So you disguise. It's what films have been doing since, you know, the Swedish sex films where some professor comes out at the beginning and says, what you're about to see could happen to your daughter if you're not careful. And then we get to see girls having lesbian sex for 90 minutes. So there's a dishonesty there. But Beelzebub is not like that. He's very upfront. Hey, these are the movies I make. And I wallow in this filth and degradation because I get off on it. Well, he doesn't say it maybe explicitly like that, but he certainly doesn't disguise his intention. The thing I don't like about his films is not the violent, sexist, or juvenile content so much, is that he's better than a lot of his films. Because he's made a few films that I thought were really interesting and clever. Like when he did Ass Monster, which was a self-reflexive parody on the sort of films that he's been making. That should have been, for me, a turning point where, wait a minute, this guy's really funny, he's insightful, he's clever, and he can make a film that offers a perspective on the films he's been making. I expected to see more from him after that. And the few films I saw after Ass Monster seemed to just go back to the kind of like low-level films he was making fun of initially.
Yeah, because those, he makes the dirty movies because people buy them, and that funds the comedies, which is what he likes to make.
Right.
But
there's another great one he did called, like, I think it was the most offensive comedy ever made, and it was really epic, and it had like special effects in it and like miniatures.
Oh, wait, are you thinking of the worst horror movie ever made? Because that had some crazy stuff with a woman.
Is that the one with the military guys and the gay military men? Yeah. Maybe I'm confusing it because he does sort of.
No, there is the most offensive comedy ever made, but there's also the worst horror movie ever made.
Maybe I'm thinking of that one.
That was the first one I saw. That's the one I wrote about in my column.
Right.
And I interviewed for him. Because my introduction to Beelzebub was J.T. Petty's Sandman.
Right.
Which was, you know, supposed to be a documentary about those kind of movies.
Yeah.
You've seen it?
I have seen it, but I was familiar with Beelzebub from way before.
Yeah, I knew.
So, you know what? Me and Beelzebub, we go back, way back. I'm actually tighter with him than you.
I had heard his name, but I didn't really know anything about him. But when I saw Sandman, I'm like, okay, this is Beelzebub character I've been hearing about. I got to see some of his movies. So
he's awesome in that movie.
Yeah, he is, because he's drinking.
I'd just like to see him, you know what, I'd like to see him make less films and better films, because I know he's capable of it.
Yeah, well, I just wanted to say the first time I met him was at the Festival of Fear, I guess in 2010. Then last year, he was at Shockstock in London, Ontario. I went down for that. It's your old hometown, too, isn't it?
It's not my hometown. I lived there for 7 years. 7 miserable, long years of hell.
So anyways, we were hanging out, and after the show closed, you know, a bunch of us were going out for beers. Bill came along. So the one place where there was a restaurant, you know, we sort of ate some food and paid the bill and left. And we're deciding where we wanted to go next. Is it the screening that the Shockstock guys are putting on? Or are we going to go to a bar? Bill wants to go to a strip joint. So me and my buddy Rob were like, all right. We'll go to a strip joint. I don't know why you want to go to a strip joint. I hadn't been to one since I was in my 20s.
Do you want me to spell it out for you why?
Well, no. I understand, but I didn't. Bill went there to look at the strippers. He didn't go there to talk to us, hang out, and crack jokes. He went there to look at the women.
Right.
I didn't think that you did that after a certain age. Especially a guy who films naked women all the time in his movies. You figure, you know, he'd get a little tired of it. Apparently not. He perved out on all the women there. I was pissed because I'm paying like $7 a beer.
For you, you were more excited about being amongst male company. You wanted to, it was a bromance that you were looking for, not naked females strutting their stuff on the stage.
No, I wanted to use the opportunity to get inside the mind of Beelzebub.
Well, maybe that was the opportunity. That was the lesson.
So how do you want me to act?
I'll get to that in a second. I just want to cover how we're going to behave. I don't want to scare that girl. She's a trained actress.
Is she SAG?
Nope.
Or is she one of these girls who isn't part of any union, but she wants to build up her resume by appearing in as many movies as possible in which she has speaking parts?
The point of this meeting is just to let you know we can't be assholes like we usually are. I want her to talk about us, how professional we are, and as the word spreads through the industry, we'll get more trained actresses.
But how much more is she costing us than a booby girl?
She's actually charging less.
She's charging less and she's going to show Bush?
Yes, that's because she understands the story. She read the whole script, she's fine with everything. Everything's acceptable to her. She understands it's essential to the bit. So when you start taking her clothes off, don't stare at her crotch or her tits. And you, no whistling, no gawking. And someone's got to tell George that that's not the time to tell her that she looks hot.
I would be remiss if I didn't bring this up at some point during the interview, so let me get into this now before we run out of time. Last year on the podcast, We made quite a lot out of some of your comments that you wrote on the RooMorgue blog in response to one of my Women in Horror Month theme shows. I actually forget now the exact show that you were commenting on. What was it was the I Spit on Your Grave. And somehow that really got under your skin, and you wrote a series of tirades on the blog, which we took great delight in analyzing and dissecting and breaking down sentence by sentence on probably more shows than we sort of in good taste.
Yeah, you milked that. That's okay.
I milked that.
Because I had just as much fun writing that.
Well, explain yourself. Are you going to officially apologize for any of that stuff, or do you remain woefully unrepentant?
First of all, I never considered that anybody would actually read it, because I have...
Did you not watch The Social Network?
Written.
Do you not know that what you write on the internet isn't in pencil? It's in pen.
Yes, I understand that, but I have contributed various blog posts to the blog as well, and most of them never get a comment. So I'm like, does anybody actually read this? So I
got like about 200. Thanks to you.
Well, yes, because again, I don't. Were there even any? Before I commented, there might have been one or two.
No. The podcast was consistently getting comments. I don't think you paid attention to the fact that the podcast, when it started, was consistently generating a lot of discussions.
Yeah. Well, okay, I guess I wasn't looking at that closely enough.
So you stepped into the hornet's nest without even knowing it.
So, because we had been going back and forth on the message board about something else. You kept casting me as, like, some right-wing nut.
Don't shoot the messenger. Don't shoot the messenger.
So I thought, okay, listen to this. And I'm like, oh, God, because, okay, I'll address the Women in Horror Month thing after. What I did after listening to that, I'm like, oh, okay, you're digging up I Spit on Your Grave, which was made in the 70s. Different attitudes back then. You know, it was a completely different time. But you're projecting, you know, 2000s political correctness on this, you know, exploitation movies from the 70s.
Well, I didn't realize what we were doing. But
yeah, well, yes. And you're all feeling good yourself about it. So I thought, okay, I'm going to comment. I'm going to pick the most right-wing, sexist, male chauvinist, anything I could possibly think of to push your buttons.
Right.
So I did that, and I was giggling while I did it. The problem was, because you even knew at first, because you went, was this a joke? If I had of just went tee-hee and left it at that, it would not have turned into the monster that it did. The problem was I tried to keep the gag going.
Right. So it all backfired.
It eventually backfired, yes.
So
once
is this
Doug Buck stepped in, because I'm like, uh-oh, now...
But you know how bad that looks? You got all these women going, what the fuck is this guy writing? And then you keep up this, like, tirade. But then a man steps in and says, hey, wait a minute, I don't like what you're writing. Then you start backpedaling. Do you know how that looked?
It was not that it was a man. It was that it was somebody of consequence. It could have been a woman. It just happened to be that that was the first...
But prior... Well, I have to call you up on this. Because prior to Doug chiming up, I think Monica jumped on and said something. Are you telling me right now that you don't consider her to be of consequence?
Well, yes, I do. But she was not speaking out against me, specifically.
Okay. So is this your apology? Is this you building up to your...
But, okay, there are ways I expressed certain ideas that were completely over the top, that was fully intentional. You know, I didn't expect that Miss Spider Baby would read the comments.
Were you drunk when you wrote all that stuff?
Some of it.
What about Ms. Spider Baby?
Well, see, okay, here's the thing, the problem I have with the...
Are you
the
friends with her now, or...?
The Horror Month. No. I've never spoken to her.
Right. Unlikely you will.
I don't care. See, the thing with the Women in Horror Month, Chris mm-hmm. Alexander spoke out against it in Fangoria, and the website that promotes it excoriated him, and he backpedaled.
Did he? I'm not aware that he backpedaled on any of it.
Yeah, he did to a certain degree. See, the problem I have with Women in Horror Month is that all the people who are promoting Women in Horror are promoting something that they're trying to sell.
Right.
Be it a book.
Right.
Or something else. So I look at it as it being a pretty phony affair. You know, you talk about the patriarchy and the film industry and everything else. I don't know about that, so I don't comment on it. Mm-hmm. I just see a bunch of people who write, some of them who aren't very good, who are using this to make themselves stand out in the crowd instead of letting their writing do that for them.
Right. So you object to it?
I don't object to it
in principle, or you just criticize how it's being used?
I don't object to it in principle. It's meaningless to me. I don't care about it. I've worked with women in horror the entire time I've been writing. Mm-hmm.
So you think there's an equality in the film industry, the horror industry? You think it's a total...
No, I can't say that there is, and I can't say that there isn't.
So you don't accept that there is an inequality?
I have no control over it. What does it matter?
Well, it does matter. If we accept that there's an inequality, then we can justify having something like Women in Horror Month, something that takes a specific focus on a traditionally repressed faction of the horror community in order to raise awareness of the issues that lead to the inequality. Right? This is why I'll explain why I get behind the Women in Horror Month thing, or why I have. Now, keep in mind, long before Women in Horror Month came about, I was doing Women in Horror Month. But I was doing it in March, surrounding International Women's Day. In fact, way back, I think in 2003, on CKLN, I brought Jovanka Vukovic, and we did a whole show on the history of women in horror and the most notable female directors. And you're scraping the bottom of the barrel to come up with names. You know, Mary Lambert, Mary Harron. There's a couple of Marys, and that's about it. There's no sizable, notable figures behind the camera. That's changing now because there's a lot more impetus towards women feeling empowered to assume those roles and to battle a male-dominated industry. And things like Women in Horror Month help that. So I support it in theory, although I do see the problems. And you've identified one of the big problems is that it becomes a very convenient way for certain women to just self-promote their own endeavors.
Yeah,
that
I'm writing may be a book substandard. About women in exploitation movies.
Yeah, it may be substandard work that is being kind of lifted by the Women in Horror Month movement. I will accept that. But it's a valuable thing to have a movement like this.
See, I've worked with women in horror, as I said.
Right.
Worked with women for as long as I have been involved in this business.
Right.
And it never once occurred to me to look at them any differently than the males.
But we do. But we do.
No, we don't.
We do, because here's a very simple way. Think of, like, the most famous horror filmmakers. They're all men. They're generally all white men. So we do think of them differently. Fulci is a god. Romero is a god. Carpenter is a god. Hooper, well, maybe not a god, but he's, you know, he's welcome to go to their dinner parties. What women are invited to that party? There aren't.
I don't know, because I'm not involved in that aspect of the business. So
you're involved in horror. You've got to have a perspective on how the gender divisions play out in the horror genre as a whole. It's very obvious if you step back and look that women are relegated to a kind of a subsection, especially behind the camera. My focus has always been on women directors. There aren't hardly any of them. I mean, there's more now. There's a huge amount now, and they feel empowered to do it. And I think in about 10, 20 years, when we sit back and look at who all the big names are behind the cameras in the horror movies being made by studios or whatever exists in the future, as far as like the big factions of the film industry, we're going to see a hell of a lot more women in those positions. Because of things like this, because of even the discussion we're having, we're discussing issues of why women are being relegated to a subclass of filmmakers. In a roundabout way, not directly, but the fact that we're having this conversation is meaningful.
Well, I understand what you're saying, but other than being consumers, how much control do we have over what happens in, you know, a giant corporate office in Hollywood?
You know what? It all comes down to, if you're a movement, that's a political thing.
Do you honestly think they give a shit?
Who?
You know, the big studio heads you're ostensibly protesting against.
Well, listen, if you look at a history of any kind of social change, you see, movements get formed and protests get organized and they escalate to the point where they actually do manage to put serious pressure on whatever power structures. Believe me, none of the progress we've made came easily. The civil rights movement, people got executed by FBI agents in their bedrooms to make some of the changes,
to
get the black vote, to get the women vote, you name it, to get labor rights. You know, back 100 years ago when we were looking at these Edison films, people were working 12-hour days, 6 days a week, you know. People fought hard, and you have to be willing to stick your neck out. And I was very disappointed that people didn't do that last year. And I did, and I paid a price for it, believe it or not. I'll tell you that, you know. Straight up, this happened.
I'm aware of that.
But on another way, I was like, you know what? That's the price you pay for speaking out for what you believe in, right? You have to be prepared that there will be a reaction. So if you're not willing to sacrifice something, then it's meaningless. So I think the Women in Horror Month as a movement, it needs to still grow to become an actual movement and not just a token thing where people are using it to sort of promote themselves. And I say that with all due respect to the women who created it and a lot of the women who organize it, women like Heidi, because she does do a lot of, I think, great work in facilitating exposure of women in the horror genre and with the Viscera Film Festival and everything. But I don't see it as a movement that has any teeth. Maybe in the future, but not right now. It's got some work to do.
I have never considered anyone's gender when I've been in this business, as I was saying earlier. You know,
yeah, but that's you.
Worked for years with Ivanka. I did not treat her one iota differently than I did Rodrigo before her or Dave after. I've worked with Monica for years. Lisa Lattiser would copy edit my stuff. Sometimes I would be working with all three women at the same time.
Yeah, but just because you think of women as equal doesn't mean they have equality. They don't. My girlfriend works in special effects and makeup on some big movies. That's a boys' club. And she's friends with other women who are kind of like part of that industry. And they face a whole different set of challenges to playing in that realm. Because they're women, and they're immediately, to be honest, they're sidelined. It's all men who are keys on a lot of the shows. It's all men who run all the effects shops. It's a boys' club. It's very difficult for women, you know. So they're actually on the front lines of progress because they're trying to break into an industry that's traditionally been men, but more women are getting involved, so they're dealing with all these issues. You know, they're making progress for paving the way for other women in the future. But without a question, regardless of how you feel about gender, there is an inequality with regards to gender in the film business. You can say the same about race and sexual orientation as well, but we're talking about women right now.
Well, yeah, but I can't personally speak to the truth of that. It's outside my sphere of influence and interest. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I just see people trying to promote crap out of it, and that's what I take away from it. You know, you want traffic to your website, you want somebody to publish this book you're supposedly writing, That's what I take away from it. And that's what I base my whole reaction on. All as right. over the top as it was.
Fair enough.
And I would like to state that the video I noted in one of my posts of a certain woman in horror appearing in her negligee, or like in lingerie, right. to spew a few facts about Cannibal Holocaust, I did not make that up. That video was pulled because I went looking for it after. So, a little bit of hypocrisy in some of this, too.
Well, we're getting into a whole other...
Well, yeah, you've already dismissed level. That part of it, too.
Yeah. So. I want to actually get into that issue about sexualized images of women, because I think that's an interesting discussion to have, but not necessarily with you.
Well, no, because truth be told, the whole Elvira... The Katarina's Midnight Movie thing that these DVDs have, companies have going on, I think is thoroughly fucking insulting. And I don't want to look at that. I just want to see the movie. I don't want to have to ogle the wrestling diva for 5 minutes before the movie. What the fuck is she doing there? What significance is it? Get out of the way.
You don't like Elvira.
I mean, she seems like a nice person, but that whole horror host shtick, I don't like... The one guys do it either. I used to watch that when I was a kid. I don't care about it anymore. You know, just get out of the way. Again, it's somebody trying to make money and promote themselves off the back of the work of others. You could say that about us too. But, you know, I think we're presenting something of value more than just putting on a stupid costume and saying and making a few bad jokes.
So why the hell did you show up looking like the super host?
What are you talking about? I got shorts and a venue-appropriate t-shirt.
You're ruining the visual for the listeners. I think they'll prefer to think of you as sitting there with a clown nose on and a Superman cape.
No, the only way I play dress-up is black t-shirts.
Hello, darling. This is Elvira, Mistress of the Dark, and I'm at the Festival of Fear. You're listening to Rue Morgue Radio.
Well, getting back to this thing about demons on the web, I have a suggestion for you. You should write an article on the mortuary for Rue Morgue. Formerly the Rue Mortuary, now under new management. You're one of the people who've actually come on board with the mortuary and you participate. But that's an evolution, in a sense, of an online community that started way back.
Yeah. Well, I guess because it
Demons works. On the Web Part 2.
The original Rumor Board started in 2003, February of 2003. And right. Yeah, it lasted almost 9 years.
Well, speaking of the mortuary, for the month of August, I have generously afforded you the opportunity to write about some movies outside of the horror genre.
Yes, and due to the month, there are 5 Fridays, so I got to pick 5 of my favorite movies.
And what are they?
Outside of the horror genre. Well, I was trying to think of a theme that would go over well, and I came up with Vigilante Month.
Excellent.
Beginning with Dirty Harry. It's the film that made Clint Eastwood an icon. The Spaghetti Westerns made him a star. Dirty Harry movies made him an icon. And then, of course, we had Death Wish, which made Charles Bronson a screen icon. Then we went, my next choice was the Vigilante, William Lustig's follow-up to Maniac, which has a lot of elements of Maniac in it. I watched it again recently just to prepare my write-ups for it. It's quite good. It's a pretty dark movie, very depressing. Then, of course, The Executioner. We're getting into straight exploitation territory. And it's going to end with Tenement, Game of Survival, by female director Roberta Findlay.
There you go.
Who's responsible for some of the worst movies you've ever seen. But Tenement's a lot of fun.
I just want to point out that you did have to sort of rethink how you were going to phrase that, because we've just recently been joined by your 3 kids for these closing moments.
Exactly. Got to watch the language.
So go on.
So yeah, I think that's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be a month of people getting killed.
Well, I'm looking forward to reading some of the filthy thoughts that you come up with and revisiting some of these films and watching some of them for the first time. So thank you very much. I will link to the whole thing on the blog article for this show.
I think it's going to be fun. At least I hope it is.
I know what you're thinking. Did he fire 6 shots or only 5? Well, to tell you the truth, in all this excitement, I've kind of lost track myself. But Ian, this is a .44 Magnum, the most powerful handgun in the world, and would blow your head clean off. You've got to ask yourself one question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, punk?
And while we have your three little ones in the room with us, why don't we bring them around to the microphone and
let's
ask them a few.
See what they have to say.
Interrogate them for a minute, because I'm curious about a few things. All right, introduce yourselves again for me.
Hi, my name is Christopher.
And I'm Laura.
And I'm Nicholas.
And you are the Gourmet's kids.
Yes.
Such good-looking, bright-looking, fresh-faced children. I can't believe you managed to spawn such impressive genetic material. Your wife must be impressive. Extra. She's doing... carrying a heavier load in this regard than she should ordinarily be asked to do.
Sometimes two negatives make a positive, I guess.
So what's it like being the Gourmet's kids?
Good, because then we get lots of fame.
Oh, you get lots of fame?
Yeah.
When you get to be on radio shows?
When you go to, like, fan expos.
Oh, right.
Yeah, they're like, oh, hey, you're the Gourmet. And then he's like, yeah, we're the Gourmet family.
So you guys got a lot of attention at the Fan Expo just because you're the Gourmet's kids.
Yeah.
And what did you think of the Fan Expo?
It's good.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Good.
What was your favorite thing last year?
Comics.
Comics?
Doing the pictures with the Star Wars characters.
Excellent.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
Yeah? And you're going to go this year?
And I got 360 Star Wars. I liked it.
So you're going to show them the guinea pig films?
No. No, this year I'll be screening Dear God, No.
Oh, we didn't even talk about that. We'll have to get you back on at the end of this, and you're going to have to fill me in. So you know that your dad watches a lot of movies that are not appropriate for young children to watch.
Yeah.
Does that bother you?
No.
You're not going to sneak down into his basement and raid his DVD collection and watch stuff you're not supposed to? So you're good. I'm not giving them bad ideas, I hope. But you do get to watch some horror movies with your dad, right? So what are some of your favorites that he's shown you?
Godzilla.
Monster
Squad.
Monster Squad.
And Godzilla.
Godzilla 2? The original Godzilla?
Yeah, and the new ones.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And so you're all budding horror fans?
Yeah.
Do you like other movies as well?
Yeah. Yeah, Star Wars and Star Trek and Cool Jack and Night Stalker.
Oh, there you go. Did you feed them that answer, Cold Check?
No. I was trying to get Ghostbusters out, because they love Ghostbusters.
Oh, yeah. Ghostbusters is so good.
Yep.
If there's something weird and it don't look good, who you gonna call? 416-410-9666.
Do you guys have arguments about what you're going to watch?
Yeah, sometimes.
Yeah, who wins the arguments? You must, because you're the oldest.
No.
Oh, you win?
Yeah.
So you let him decide?
Yeah, I usually watch the Gourmet's movies.
Yeah.
Me and Kilo.
And it was just going like this. Ooh.
No, I go
like that.
Don't you know?
Yeah, I do. Wow, this is surreal. So your dad's okay then, is he, at home?
Yeah.
Is he mild-mannered?
No.
No?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Does he make dinners for you?
Yeah.
Is he a good cook?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Makes it during the school year.
Okay. And what's the best thing that he makes?
Macaroni and cheese.
Yeah,
shake and bake.
Shake and bake chicken. Come on, gourmet. Try harder.
What about Daddy's Chinese food?
Yeah, that's good.
Oh, he makes his own Chinese food?
Yeah.
Does he wear his gourmet apron while he cooks?
No.
I'm not getting that dirty. I've never seen it.
Me more seen it. No, yeah, he pulls it out for Halloween.
Yeah. And he wears it when he comes to, like, sometimes he wears it.
No, sometimes he wears it on Halloween.
Does he ever walk around the house in a house coat?
Yes.
Yeah. He didn't go 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
This is great. Well, thank you, kids, for spending a few moments with us on the Roomog podcast. Good luck growing up under the influence of your father. I wish you all the best, and I hope that he exposes you to a lot of good movies and he hides some of the bad ones until the appropriate time.
Sometimes he doesn't.
Oh, he doesn't?
No.
Has he ever shown you anything that your mum was angry at him for showing you? Like what?
Like, he started letting me watch some movie called Reanimator.
Oh, that's a good one. You showed them that?
No.
No, you showed me the beginning when they're, like, introducing, like, the people, like, the characters.
I did?
Yeah, you did.
I'm sending a copy of this interview to the Children's Protection Agency, by the way. I'm just letting you know there. So be careful what you say. You may get taken away from your dad and put into foster homes.
I don't think that's going to happen.
I'm joking. Don't worry. So we'll be seeing you guys at the Festival of Fear at the end of the month. How about that?
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, thank you for indulging me for a few moments.
You're welcome.
This is not an advertisement for a new movie. This is a warning. If you are squeamish, a victim of nightmares, or have a weak heart, know your fright quotient before you see H.P. Lovecraft's classic tale of horror, Reanimator. Way beyond the possibility of any rating.
Starts Friday at a theater near you.
So before I let you go, you've got to fill me in on what you're planning to do for the Festival of Fear this year. Because I know there's a panel, it's called Girls, Gore, and Godforsaken Cinema. What's that all about?
That will be myself and fellow Rumored writers Last Chance Lance, John Bowen, and Aaron Von Lupton. Apparently we are going to be convening in a panel and talking about videotapes.
Bowen? Oh, that's going to be great. I'm going to make sure somebody's there to record that.
Yeah, I hope it goes through. I'll have my camera running. I didn't do it last year because this was a panel we were supposed to have last year, but Lance was scheduled to host a panel on a different panel at the same time, and Bowen couldn't be there that day, so it was just me.
Mm-hmm.
So they've got Aaron Von Lupton to come in, and I recruited Tim Sullivan and Greg Lamberson, and we had a blast. It worked out really well.
Right.
I'm really sorry I didn't, you know, have a camera running and video record and put it up on YouTube. It was a lot of fun.
Right.
So we're going to try it again this year, and I'm hoping it goes through.
And you're screening something.
Yeah, I'm going to do it again this year. I'm going to be showing Dear God No, which is an absolutely loopy homage to every single kind of exploitation genre you could possibly think of. It's just, it's mad.
You wrote about that, I see, in the current issue of Rue Morgue.
Yes, which sort of made it timely. Rod asked me when I wanted to show, and I'm like, okay, well, we could show this because I don't think it's played anywhere here.
And you're generally not a big fan of these sort of retrospective faux grindhouse movies, but
sometimes
in this
case, I am, sometimes I'm not.
Right.
You know, I really enjoyed Hubble with a Shotgun. Dear God, No didn't thrill me. I'm not super excited about it, but it is a good movie to show because, you know, it's an independent release. It's going to be hard for people to get their hands on. So it'll be fun to screen.
It's almost dark, I'm fucking sober, and I got to kill anyone today.
Hide your daughters. The Impalers are coming. Bikers. scum of the earth. Meet the 1% of the 1%ers. Full throttle on the bottle. They're no angels.
They're free. Free to bang life in the ass.
The sickest sicko gang to ever terrorize a town.
Disgusting animals!
Ravaging, roaming rapists, destroying everything decent. Kill crazy dope fiends in a feeding frenzy. Cop-killing law haters, stabbing the Lloyds of Liberty. Out of their minds for sadistic kicks. Depraved white trash who hunt in packs. Speed freaks holding morality hostage until they unleash the gates of hell. What happens in this house will freak you out.
What is the meaning of this?
See, the nerve-shattering happening that turned innocence into a living nightmare of death. See, an onslaught orgy of carnal killing. See, blood, blood, and more blood.
Nothing can prepare you. We can only warn you. Your mind will be violated. Sex and violence so unbearable, so overwhelming, so uncomfortable you'll want to scream.
Best pussy ever, and hairy!
And I'm sure, as usual, you will be seen at the Roomorg parties and the offside events, standing in the corner drooling in a puddle of your own spittle.
No, I didn't. I didn't go to any last year.
No,
no.
You're on the wagon.
No, I'm getting old for these things.
Tell me, where can people find you on YouTube?
YouTube.com/TheGourmet, capital T H E, capital G O R M E T. No apostrophe.
The Gourmet.
Yes.
And don't forget...
no hyphen. They wouldn't let me use one.
And of course, to read some of the Gourmet's blatings on his various vigilante films for the Ludovico Film Institute, go to www.the-mortuary.com. So thank you very much, Mr. Gourmet, for dropping by.
Good hanging out.
Thank you to your wonderful children for participating.
I'm sure it'll be fun. There'll only be a little...
There's one left. The other two have left.
They and my be condolences able to most of this, but...
And my condolences to the Mrs. Gourmet. Leave your comments on the Roomorg blog. I hope we get some comments to this one. Leave your comments on the Roomorg blog at www.roo-morg.com.
Magnum, the most powerful handgun in the world, and it could blow your head clean off. Do you feel lucky?